Okay, so let me try to set this up. Last time we took one particular task, which was that of sorting socks, putting socks into pairs, and I actually presented four different ways to do it. You might be able to think of other ways to do it. I'll be willing to take suggestions. I would say that in this case, each of them was a different algorithm, a different way of organizing the steps, different way of organizing what you're going to do when. At the end, they all produce the same thing, which is a pile of sorted socks. But there's lots of different ways to get there. And in particular, some of them required fewer times of reaching into the basket than others. So what we'd like, and I actually wrote a little program that ran each of these algorithms on 100 pairs of socks 100 times and counted up the number of times that it ended up reaching into the basket, and we could see which algorithms, at least in that sample, provided fewer reaches into the basket than others. Some of the algorithms were better in that measure than others. But what's useful is this: in computer science, there's lots of different algorithms that we try for lots of different problems. Let's come up with a framework that we can apply in lots of different cases. So that's what I'd like to do, is introduce the way that computer scientists make these kinds of comparisons with algorithms. So in particular, say you just devised some new algorithm and you want to know which one is better. You have two different ways of solving the problem, you want to know which is better. One thing you could do is you could try, so in particular, you're actually trying to solve some problem in the real world. One way you could evaluate the algorithms is try them on all possible inputs. But that would sort of defeat the purpose, right? If you're writing a program to solve a problem, and the only way you can decide which program to run is by running, like solving all problems in advance, then you don't really need the program anymore once you've done that. So that's not really the way you want to do it. So we're going to try to take a different way of doing it, different way of evaluating, attaching identifiers to different algorithms so we can say which one is better. And I'll apply this idea specifically to sock sorters. But leading up to that, I want to introduce the basic mathematical concepts of growth rates in a different context. I'm going to do it in terms of songs. We talked about writing subroutines that print out songs, right? So there's this. We already have this kind of a natural connection between programs and songs. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about how many syllables we sing given a song of a certain type as the number of verses grows. So we're only going to be able to apply this analysis to songs for which you can generate any number of possible verses. There, it turns out that there's a lot of songs that have this form, and that's all I'm going to tell you about that. But in particular, we're going to say, we're going to attach the letter N to the number of verses that we're talking about, and we want to figure out, for this song with N verses, how many syllables do we sing? Okay? So let me start off with one concrete example. I did Christmas lights, so I feel like it's sort of okay if I do a dreidel example. So people know the dreidel song, I had a little dreidel, I made it out of clay, and when it's dry and ready, oh dreidel I shall play, and then there's a chorus, dreidel, 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 I made it out of clay, and when it's dry and ready, oh dreidel I shall play. Well, once you sing this enough times in Hanukkah, it turns out there's like five Hanukkah songs, so you end up singing all of them way too many times. You start to get creative, and you start to think, hey, well, we don't have to just make them out of clay, we can make them out of plastic. I had a little dreidel, I made it out of plastic, and if someone steals my dreidel, I'll do something very drastic. I got that one off the web. I'm not sure I would do much better with that, but I got that one off the web. You can make them out of glass or chocolate. So you can imagine generating any number of verses for the dreidel song. Right? We need to have a notion of songs that can have any number of verses. So the dreidel song we can generate, at least you can imagine in principle, generating it with any number of verses. In this case, how many do I have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. But you know, it's not limited, right? There's always more materials. You know, I had a little dreidel, I made it out of basalt. You know, whatever. You can make big dreidels out of anything. So in the 8 verses that I gave, there's actually 8 different songs. So I could say, hey, will you sing me the dreidel song with 4 verses? Okay. No. You sing it out for the 4 verses and then you stop. Could you sing the dreidel song with 6 verses? And then you can sing out with 6 verses. But the question is, you can just count them here. If you sing the dreidel song with 1 verse, it's 51 syllables. You just can't, you know, I had a little, this is tedious, but you can imagine counting out all the syllables. If we sing the dreidel song with 2 verses, that's the whole first verse and the chorus, and then the whole second verse and the chorus, you get a total of 109 syllables. You sing the 3 verse version of the dreidel song, it's 161 syllables. You with me? Yeah, go ahead.
You're talking about like 3 different verses, right? Like
so the 3 verse song has 3 verses in it and 3 choruses in it. Yeah. So these are 8 different versions of the song, and in each song, it consists of however many verses we're saying. And the 8 verse song has the 7 verse song in it. There's just 1 verse at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. So So each time the number of syllables is growing, right? Can you see that? So this is clear enough, right? So different number of verses of the dreidel song gives us different number of syllables. And in fact, we can make, you know, PowerPoint and those things actually let you make these into a graph. So it says, here's 8 different versions of the song for each different number of verses n. How many syllables do we end up singing? And you can see, what's the shape of this? What's that?
Increases.
It increases, yeah, but with what shape? You can increase like this, you can increase like this. This one's increasing like a straight line, linearly. Right, this is a line. The only reason I point this out is because the other songs we're going to look at don't have this property, but this one does. In particular, if you statistically estimate what's going on here, basically each verse and chorus has a total of 54 syllables. So if you sing a 5-verse version of the song, you get 54 syllables times 5 verses, and that's what you get up here. And in general, if you're singing a version of the song with n verses, it's basically 54 times n syllables. Okay, I mean, that's what you'd expect. If each time you add another verse, you're adding another 54 syllables. And this function, this function 54 times n, is a linear function. It's a function that makes a line if you plot it. And in particular, this is do you remember what this is called? The what of the line? Slope, right. This is the slope of the line. So that's a linear function. So let's look at a different kind of song. We've done this song already in this class, the Old MacDonald song. The thing about the Old MacDonald song, and the reason it was interesting in the other lecture too, is because each time we add another verse, the structure changes a little bit. So what is this here? Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-A-O. This is verse 4. So verse 4, you sing Old MacDonald, and then you do the cluck cluck here and cluck cluck there. You do the nay nay here and the nay nay there. You do the snort snort here and snort snort there. You do a moo moo here and moo moo there, and then it ends. Okay, that's just verse 4. If you sing the 4-verse version of the Old MacDonald song, you sing verse 1, which just has the clucking in it. Then you sing verse 2, which has the clucking and the neighing. Then you sing verse 3, which has the clucking, the neighing, and the snorting. And then finally you sing this one, verse 4, which has clucking, neighing, snorting, and mooing. And you can imagine what verse 50 would be like, right? It would be a veritable barnyard of excitement. So let's count up the number of syllables just in verse 4. So the first little bit has 25 syllables, the last little bit has 12 syllables, and then we have the cluck cluck part, which is 22, and the nay nay part, which is also 22, and the snort snort part, which is also 22, and the moo moo part, which is also 22, like so. So the total here is the 25 plus the 12, which is 37, and then 4 times 22, or a total of 125 syllables for verse 4 of the song. Okay, you with me? And there's a pig, just to remind you that we're talking about pigs. All right, so the whole 4-verse song, this is just verse 4, the whole 4-verse song has verse 1, verse 2, verse 3, and verse 4, which have syllable structures that look just like this. It has the 37, which is the top and the bottom, and the first verse just sings the sounds once, the second verse sings the sounds twice, the third verse sings the sounds 3 times, and the fourth verse sings the sounds 4 times. Okay, we good? This is not advanced math, but I'm trying to organize it in a particular way to make it easy to generalize. So the total for the whole 4-verse song is 368 syllables, 125 of which are just verse 4, but the rest are verses 1 through 3. Okay? All right? So again, we could do this same kind of trick. We can say, all right, a 1-verse version of the Old MacDonald has a total of 59 syllables. 2-verse has a total of 140. I just showed you 4-verse was 368. 5, 6, 7, 8 verse actually has 1,088 syllables. So you gotta really love to sing if you're gonna do that one. So here's a plot now. I just took those numbers, which I got by counting the syllables in the song, and I plotted them on a graph. It's increasing again, just like the last time, but it's increasing a little differently. Can you see the shape of this curve? You might not know exactly what the shape is, but is it linear?
No.
No, and why do you think it's not linear? It has a little bow in it, right? It looks like it's sort of, you know, it's starting off, but then it's increasing faster and faster as time goes on. Okay? Does anyone want to venture a guess as to what the growth rate really is here? I'll tell you in a moment, so it's not like you'll be in suspense very long. But some people might have played with graphs like this before. What's that?
N squared.
Yeah, it's a quadratic curve. It's like a parabola. That's exactly right. So the number, you know, the growth rate of syllables in the generalization of Old MacDonald, it also follows the same kind of trajectory as when you throw a ball. It's also parabola. Right? Balls follow this sort of thing. Anyway, that's not so interesting. It's a little bit hard to see in that case, so I actually did it all the way out to 19. So this represents the number of syllables in a version of Old MacDonald where you actually have 19 animals and you sing all the way up to the 19th verse. And now you're talking about almost 5,000 syllables and a lot of bored listeners. So that's what we get. And you can see it really is starting to cut upward, right? The song is growing faster and faster because each time you add a new verse, you have to sing about all the old animals before you can get to the new animal. So now what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be doing some very fast performance-based algebra, right? So I'm just going to show you the algebra. I'm not expecting you to be able to do these kinds of analyses, but I'd like you to at least understand where we get with it. And I want you to, if you can follow me, I want you to at least be able to understand what the steps were that got me to the answer. So here's what I want to do. What if we have a song with n verses, a Old MacDonald song with n verses? So now n could be any old number. So what's going to happen? Well, verse I. So this is, now we're wondering what happened. Oh, I see. Verse I of any song is going to have 37 plus 22 times I syllables in it. Okay? For the beginning and the end plus the I different noises you have to make in that verse. So if you have a song with n verses, you do verse 1, verse 2, all the way up to verse n. So the question is, what form does that function actually take? So one nice way of actually seeing this is, well, we've got this pattern that we're summing n times, so each one has a 37 in it. So the sum is going to have 37, or n 37s in it, or 37 times n. And now, what else do we got? We have 1 times 22 plus 2 times 22 plus 3 times 22 all the way up to n times 22, which is really 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 all the way up to n, that sum, times 22. Okay? So we've rearranged it a little bit, and we've got something that's maybe a little more recognizable. What's the sum of the numbers from 1 to n? So you might not know this off the top of your head, but it turns out there's a really easy trick. There's a really nice way to see this. So how do you figure out the sum of the numbers 1 to n? So let's do 10 first. Or actually, I guess in this case it's 6. So if I asked you to figure out this total, you could just add them up, right? 1 plus 2 is 3, plus another 3 is 6, plus 4 is 10, plus 5 is 15, plus 6 is 21. That's not so hard. But if I wanted you to do that all the way up to 100, you could do it. But you'd hate me by the end of it, right? I wouldn't ask you to do it that way. But it turns out there's a shortcut. There's a much easier way to see it. So let me show you with the numbers 1 to 6. And then you should be able to do 1 to 100. In fact, maybe I'll even make it a clicker question. All right, here we go. It's like 3 points. So this is 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 plus 6. Okay? So I wanted to make it more tangible, right? So these are little blocks. But this is the sum of the numbers 1 through 6. How many blocks are here? Well, you can count them, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But watch this. You can actually jump to the answer. How are we going to do that? Let's take that shape and copy it. And then put it back down, flipped over. So this is the dark purple are the things that we're really trying to count. The light purple is an exact duplicate, exact copy of what we just did. And when they fit together, what do we have? What kind of shape? Not exactly. It's like a square, but notice that there's 7 in this direction and 6 in this direction. So we call it a rectangle. That's right. Yeah, it's a near square. All right? So what's the size of this rectangle? It's 7 on this dimension and 6 on this dimension. So the total number of squares in here is 42. But the ones that we really care about were just half of these. So what's that? 21. Oops, I didn't write it, but that was... Remember, that's what I said when I did the numbers 1 to 6, 21. Okay? So this is sort of a cute trick. So let's all do the sum of the numbers 1 to 100. So let me just review the trick one more time. What's happened here? We have this triangle with 6 in this direction and 6 in this direction. We copy that triangle over, and to get them to fit together as a rectangle, we always get a 1 square overlap in one direction, and the other direction ends up with the same number that we had. So we're going to have a rectangle with the number of numbers times the number of numbers plus one, and we only want half of that. We only want to count the lower half, not the upper half. So that's the general way to do it. You with me? So can you do 1 to 100 now? All right, so let me see if I can do it. I'll make five choices. One of those is right. By now, you probably actually could have summed them the slow way. I believe one of those is right. All right, 10 more seconds. Alrighty-dady. Yes, it looked like the overwhelming number of people used the right rule, got the right answer, which is we take the number of numbers that we've got, 100, multiply it by the next larger number, 101, divide the whole thing by 2. This is 50 times 101, or 50-50. Or you could sum them all up, but this is much faster. So, okay, all right? So we're all right with that? Sort of a neat trick. I'm not going to test you on that. Just since we're standing here in the middle of it, it's kind of a nice thing to have in your bag of tricks, because everyone, so I was out hiking with someone recently, and the person said, huh, what do you get when you sum up the numbers 1 to 11? And I just answered them right out, like, how did you do that so fast? Like, because you don't have to sum them up. You can actually just use this rule. I know, I hike with not with maybe the same people that you hike with. All right, so what I'm saying here is if you've got all the dumb with n verses, it's going to be 37 times n plus 22 times the sum of the numbers 1 to n, and this is n times n plus 1 all over 2. And if you simplify it and multiply it out and stuff, you end up with 11 times n squared plus 48 times n. So that's an n-verse version of Old MacDonald has that many syllables that you're singing in it. All right. So we had the dreidel song, which was something times n. We had the Old MacDonald song, which was something times n squared plus something else times n. How about the n bottles of beer song? So this is sort of somewhat weird. Those first two are the ones that I really hope that you get. This one is sort of cute, and you might not get it, but it's OK. Don't worry about it so much. But here's how it goes. The 99th verse of the n bottles of beer song goes 99 bottles of beer on the wall, 99 bottles of beer. If one of those bottles happened to fall, 98 bottles of beer on the wall. And we're going to sing 99, 98, we're going to sing all the way down to verse 1. Okay? And so the end, so what is verse I going to be? Verse I is going to have 29 syllables, which correspond to the bottles of beer on the wall. Just skip the numbers for a second. The part that's the same is the bottles of beer on the wall, if one of those bottles you happen to fall. Every verse has the same structure, they're always 29 syllables. Plus, we also sing the number I twice, plus we sing the number I minus one once. Okay? So, and all the verses have that structure. So how many, so in order to figure out what this really turns into, if we're going to sing an N verse version of the song, we need to know how many syllables do we sing when we sing the number I. So it turns out that this is actually sort of complicated, because in English you have numbers like 999, and then the next number is 1,000, which you can say with very few syllables. So here's what I'm going to say. Let's not use the regular English pronunciation of the numbers, because that makes the analysis difficult. Instead, let's say that we always say a number by, for each digit, saying the name of the digit. So 999 bottles of beer on the wall, and then after that comes 1000 bottles of beer on the wall. Well, I guess it would be the other way around. Right. If we had 1,000 bottles, we'd say 1000 bottles of beer on the wall, 1000 bottles of beer. If one of those bottles should happen to fall, 999 bottles of beer on the wall. You'll sound like a robot when you do it that way, so you might not want to do it. But it makes the analysis, I'm telling you, much easier. So how long does it take to sing a number that's I, if you're going to sing one syllable per digit? Well, it's just how many digits are in I. Well, whatever this function is, it grows very, very slowly. In fact, by the number Google, which is one with 100 zeros after it, you're still only singing 101 syllables, even for a number that is astronomically large. Is that a, yeah.
Does it have to be one syllable per digit?
So I sing Sev, I don't know about you.
Zero, yeah.
And Zir, yeah, I don't know. This is a simplification. You could actually make yourself insane and analyze it so you actually get the right answer. But it ends up being so complicated that it's hard to really see what's going on. So let's just pretend that Zir or O. You say O for zero, and you say Sev for seven, and now they're all one syllable. It doesn't change things much if you say that they can be at most two syllables. It just makes it awkwarder. So what's the function that actually tells us this? Well, let's make an observation. The number, the base 10 logarithm of the number 100 is 2. The base 10 logarithm of the number 10,000 is 4. In fact, what the logarithm base 10 is, it's roughly the number of times you can take the number that you're logging and divide it by 10 before you get down to 1 or less, which is the number of decimal digits in the number. So log is the function we want. In fact, log base 10 if we're singing songs in decimal. You can imagine singing bottles of beer in binary. That would be funny too. There are other logs that come up. People in the natural sciences often use the natural log, different use of the word natural, which is actually a logarithm to the base e, which is like 2.7 and a bunch of other things. I tend not to look at this logarithm because that's the science people. I like the base 2 log. The number of times that you can have a number before you get down to one or less. This comes up a lot in computer science. So, all right, so let's use that insight to try to figure out how many syllables in verse I of the N bottles of beer on the wall song. Approximately 29 per verse, for verse I, 29, plus three times, we're going to sing the number I three times, so it's three times the logarithm of I. So if we've got an N verse song, we're talking about 29 times N plus 3 times the logarithm of 1 plus the logarithm of 2 plus the logarithm of 3 all the way up to N, which is the last bottles of beer on the wall number that we sing. So it turns out that if you look at this sum, it's sort of very complicated to work out this sum, but almost all the numbers are very close to the last log N. In fact, 90% of them are there. So really, we're talking about something that's roughly 29 times n times 2.8 times n log n. So let me, I think I have a little animation. Yeah. So really what's happening in this sum here is that it's n repeats of a number that's essentially log n. So it's really n times log n, this whole sum. That's a little bit bigger than what the real answer is, but it's very close to that. So let's just call it that for the sake of the analysis. So really, we're talking about the total number of syllables in an N-verse version of this song is like N times the logarithm of N times some constant plus N times something else. All right, so what did I really want you to get out of that? If you didn't follow all the hand-wavy algebra, performance algebra, really what I'm saying here is, remember we had one, the dreidel song ended up being something times n. The old MacDonald song ended up being something times n squared, plus some other stuff. This one ends up being something times n times the logarithm of n, plus something else. There's one other major song type worth mentioning, and this comes up in the N Days of Christmas song. Now, people are probably familiar with the 12 Days of Christmas song, but it's very easy to imagine having things other than Lords Leaping and Ladies Dancing and so forth. And you can imagine verses that are a version of the song that could go on as long as you really wanted to. On the 832nd day of Christmas. Anyway, you could imagine. That's all I'm saying is you could imagine. All right, so how does this go? So this is verse 10 of the real song on the 10th day of Christmas. Get 10 lords a-leaping, 9 ladies dancing. And again, to make this easy for the analysis, we're not going to say 10, right? We're going to say 1-0 ladies dancing. Again, you don't really do this. All right, so in verse I, what happens? There ends up being 11 syllables that you're singing, plus 4 plus the number of syllables that it takes to say the number I, plus 4 plus the number of syllables that it takes to say the number I minus 1, because we're counting down, right? We're singing Lords a leaping, 4 syllables, plus whatever it is to take the number. So it's like 832 professors, boring, whatever it is. I mean, each verse is going to have that same structure. So when we sum them all up, we're really talking about something like 11 plus 4 times I, because we're counting down all the way from I to 1, plus the sum of the logs, which we said before is actually I log I. So the total, and this is just for verse I, is going to be 11 plus 4 times I plus I log I. But we actually have n verses like that. So when we add up all these n verses, now I just wave my hands, because you don't really need to see how all that goes. But the fact of the matter is we end up with something that looks like this. N squared times the logarithm of n times some constant plus regular n squared times some other constant plus n log n times a constant plus n times a constant. Okay, so we get this weird-looking expression that says this is basically how many syllables it would take to sing an n-verse version of the N Days of Christmas song. All right, so now that's all the kind of major ones that I'm going to talk about. What do these have to do with one another? Well, it turns out that if we ignore the constants in front of all these different expressions and we plot the curves on the same graph, what we see is that they may all, in the beginning, you can't really tell which ones are bigger or smaller than others. But as you look at bigger and bigger n's, the functions start to separate out. The slowest growing one is the linear. This is like the dreidel song, where each verse has the same size as the previous verse. It doesn't grow all that fast. The next one up is the n log n, like the bottles of beer song. The one after that is n squared, like the old MacDonald song. And then the one that grows the fastest is the N Days of Christmas, which has n squared log n. So the functions actually order themselves once you get to big enough n's. All right? And in fact, no matter what these constants are, if you look at a big enough n, they're always going to order themselves in exactly this way. N squared log n squared log n, or n log n. And this is leading to the notion of big O. What big O is about is ignoring the constants and just basically talking about functions that, no matter what the constants are bigger than other functions. So formally, big O is a notation that denotes a class of functions, all of which are upper bounded asymptotically. But that's not so important. In practice, it gives us a way of ignoring the constants in the low order terms and cluster together functions that behave similar. So we have a function like this, 17 times n plus 91.2 times log n plus square root of n. That's just big O of n. All the lower order terms you can ignore, the constant you can ignore. When you look through your big O magnifying glass, things just look a lot simpler. There's n squared. You don't make distinctions between n and 2n or n and 8n. You just worry about this growth order. N squared, n log n, like that. That's sort of a useful way to be able to talk about things. And in fact, if you look at lots of different songs, generalized versions of lots of different songs, they end up falling into one of these classes. Now the constants in, say, an old lady, which one is an old lady? There was an old lady who swallowed a fly. I don't know why she swallowed a fly. perpetual dot. You know that one? There was an old lady who swallowed boat. A boat. It went down her throat. She swallowed a boat. She swallowed the boat to squish the fly, but I don't know why she swallowed the fly. Each verse has the whole previous structure in it, plus you add a little bit for the new thing that you've added, right? I don't think it's boat. Which has the same, this is what I'd really like you to get at is, wait a second, Old MacDonald song is just like the There Was an Old Lady song. They both have the same structure in that each verse, you add a constant amount more over the previous verse. All of these guys were going to group together. There was a tree in the middle of the ocean. No, what happened in the middle of the grass, the prettiest tree that you ever did see, and the tree, and the, nobody knows this song. What? A worm. There was a worm in the middle of the class. What? Where's the worm in?
There's one like a worm in a straw. You sit the worm and it goes down. Like
I think that's a little different.
So. I've never heard that. Is it a different structure? Do you know
I've heard
song?
Both of those, but I can't remember how they, either of them, they're both.
There's one that I heard on a Sesame Street tape that was, there's a hole in the bottom of the sea. There's a hole in the bottom of the sea. There's a hole, there's a hole, there's a hole in the bottom of the sea. Anybody?
No.
There's a log in the hole in the bottom of the sea. There's a log in the hole in the bottom of the sea. There's a log, there's a log, there's a log. Not the same kind of log we're talking about. In a hole in the bottom of the sea, there's a bump on the log in the hole in the bottom of the sea. You're getting this, right? So each verse, there's another prepositional phrase, and then you're forced to sing all the way back down to the hole, okay? And so each time you add a verse, each verse is getting longer, and each time you add a verse, the verses themselves are getting longer. So there's more verses, and each verse is longer. That's in this class. It's in the Old MacDonald class of song, the N-squared class of song. Each time we add something, we're adding, each time we add a verse, it's a slightly bigger verse than the previous one. Then you have linear songs like Dreidel and Clementine, where each verse has the same size. Then you've got songs where each verse is only a tiny bit longer because you're adding another number to it. That's the n log n class. Okay, so n is constant verse size. N log n is each verse contains the next higher number. Log n, remember, log n doesn't grow very fast. You have to go all the way up to Google before it even becomes 100. So this is really a lot like n. It's just a tiny bit bigger than n. N squared is a lot bigger than n. So that's when each verse is a constant size larger than the previous verse. And then you have these, each verse lists one more number than the previous. So you have songs like The End Days of Christmas. There's also one, Who Knows N? I think it's Who Knows One. Do people know that song? I think it's a biblically related song. And Little Monkeys. And Little Monkeys Jumping on the Bed. One fell down and bumped his head. Mama called the doctor and the doctor said, no more monkeys jumping on the bed. N minus one, little monkeys jumping on the bed. Okay, anyway. I know you know that song.
Yeah.
You just didn't know it with N, but you can always, you know, you can always make it an N. All right, so these are four different classes of songs. And what's interesting is these also correspond to four different classes of algorithms, different algorithms that actually have running times that grow linearly, quadratically, N log N, N squared log N. This one's rarer. The other ones are much, much more common. What do you want? Now, let's see if we can, am I ready to make this analogy yet? I'll show you one more visualization here. So in the linear songs, if you look at each verse, if we look at each verse as a little rectangle, we're singing a whole song, each verse has the same size as the previous verse. In the N log N songs, each verse is getting a little bit longer than the previous verse, but they don't get much longer very fast, right? Because they only get longer when you get to the next number of digits. Okay, so you do the 999 days of Christmas, and it's only after that where you go up to 1000 days of Christmas, and then you're stuck with four digits until you get all the way up to 10,000. So the verses are getting longer, but the space between each time that they get a little longer is getting longer and longer, as opposed to in the quadratic case where each verse is basically a whole other verse bigger than the previous one. And you can see this is actually, the verses themselves are growing very fast. The total of these is growing like n squared, like half of a square. Oh, I guess I'm going to talk about songs a little longer, and then I'll try to connect it back up with algorithms. So as far as I know, all the songs, and I've now researched this, because, you know, it's about being thorough for you people. All the songs that I could find all fit into one of these four classes. O of n, quadratic, n log n, n squared n. If you can discover another type, I'll give you extra credit. Just send me a song and make sure it's a song that you didn't just make up for the purpose of the extra credit. But I did, but that's what I did. I made up a couple other songs just so that I could show you a couple other important growth rates. So my kids, when they were younger, used to play this game. Hey, before they could actually count up to 100, they would say, I can count up to 100. It goes like this. 1, 2, skip a few, 99, 100. Okay, you kind of counted up to 100 in that you finished counting when you reached 100, but there's all this dot, dot, dot in the middle that you skipped. So you can also say, well, I could count up to 1,000 then. 1, 2, skip a few, 999, 1,000. So how fast does this grow? If we're gonna, how many syllables does it take to skip count to n? Well, we say 1, 2, skip a few. So there's 5 syllables, plus we say a number that's roughly log n digits twice. You know, 999, 1000. So really, this is big O of log n. It's 5 plus 2 times log n, but if we ignore the constants and so forth, we're talking about something that grows like the logarithm of n. This is a really important one. Lots of really interesting critical algorithms end up being log n algorithms, and I will present some of those because you've seen them before. If you do an exhibit now, I took this they made up, or they found on the playground and brought home, like a lot of rhinoviruses. But this is something that I made up. Imagine you're going to do the same thing but in exponential notation. So you say 1, 2, skip a few, 10^100 minus 1, 10^100. Now we actually are talking about something that's the logarithm of the logarithm of n.
Anyway, one can have fun with this sort of thing. Very slow song. On the flip side, consider a song in which verse I consists of singing all the numbers with exactly I digits. This would be a very boring song indeed. But it goes like this. I don't know. So here's the 10 verse version. It goes, each verse I is all the digits with I. Okay, so verse 1 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Verse 2 is 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, all the way to 99. Verse 3 is all the three-digit numbers. Anyway, this song, to sing a version of the song with n verses actually takes 10 raised to the nth power. So this is an example of exponential growth.
And exponential growth is interesting because people seem to want to talk about it all the time. So let me say a little bit about exponential growth. It's not just in songs, really boring songs, but it's also in things that people talk about in the news all the time. So this is a plot of the number of iPods that were sold as a function of the year. This is iPods sold against year. And so what you see here is that, you know, for the first couple of years, they sold a lot of iPods, but not as many as they could. As time went on, each year they would sell more and more and more of them, and it's actually exploded. If you try to fit curve to this, the best fit you get is an exponential curve. So the growth rate of iPod sales as a function of time has this exponential property. This is the world population from apparently 10,000 BC, I don't know who did the census, but until, you know, like now. And what you see is, again, this kind of very slow, and all of a sudden it reaches a point where it looks like it's exploding. The bacterial growth has this property. This is a plot of spam, the number of spam messages that are received as a function of time. And so for many, many years, there was spam, but it was really small. And then all of a sudden, yeah. So Moore's Law, how fast a computer gets as a function of year, back to when people started making computers. The speed of computers as a function of the year is growing in an exponential way, and that's called Moore's Law. Now, in all these cases, we expect the curves eventually to flatten out. You can't actually sell more iPods than you have, say, atoms in the universe. And the thing about exponential growth is it's only a couple years away that this graph would reach the number of atoms in the universe. So generally, in real life, you see curves that look like they explode exponentially, but then they saturate. They actually form a sigmoid. We're going to ignore that. Just talk about these as exponential. So here's the thing. And I want to bring you in on one of my pet peeves. Because it's so common, people use this word all the time. And usually they don't mean it, they don't use it correctly. They usually often will mean, when they say exponentially bigger, they mean just a lot more than it used to be, which isn't really what it means. In fact, it doesn't really make sense. So what I'd like to do is make sure that you do this right. You know, because we're all about education here. So let me give you a concrete example. These all came out of the archives of Newsweek. I didn't make this stuff up. These are other people mangling the use of the word exponential. So here's a good example. The country desperately needs to upgrade its roads and seaports and to exponentially increase agriculture and manufactured exports.
So my interpretation of this, if assuming they're using this word correctly, is that we want the number of exports as a function of time to be 10 times or 10 raised to the time, or something like that. So that the total number of exports that we're getting is growing exponentially with as time increases. That would be correct. All right, so which of these other ones are correct? Exponentially less expensive than a 20-hour flight to the bushveld of South Africa or the remote rainforest of Costa Rica, domestic safaris can be nearly as exciting and far more accessible for families with kids. What does that mean? Exponentially less expensive than a 20-hour flight. So you've got the cost of one flight and you've got the cost of another flight. Where's the exponential growth? This just means a lot less expensive than a 20-hour flight. Why didn't they say a lot? Why would they use a word like exponentially when it doesn't have anything to do with exponentiation? I don't know. So, you know, read this and you say, idiots. All right, so the demands of an organization to carry out multiple attacks like that probably increase exponentially. In other words, to carry out four simultaneous bombings is more difficult than simply just four times the difficulty of carrying out one bombing. Okay, I'm not sure I buy this, but what they're trying to say is that the difficulty level as the number of targets grows is like 10 to the number of targets. Okay, they meant, I don't think that's right, but they meant it in a sensible way. All right, how about another one? A small number of others, knowing that their chance of success with PGD is exponentially better, are becoming pioneers in the newest form of family planning. What? What is that? What does exponentially mean here? A small number of others, knowing that their chance of success is exponentially better, then what? And can you just compare two things and say one is exponentially better than the other? No, you have to have something that's growing. There has to be growth. There has to be something getting bigger with respect to something else. You can't talk about exponential if you're talking about just two points. Might as well be linear. All right, so I have a bunch of other examples like that. And so, okay, so that I don't get chastised for, because I'm going to ask a homework question like this, so I don't get chastised for not going through an example. Let's do one of these as an example. So the demand for IVF treatments, which climbed exponentially during the past 20 years, has plateaued. That seems valid to me, because what they're saying is there was some time in the past at which demand began, and then since then, as time goes forward, the demand grows exponentially. But then they said it stopped growing exponentially. Okay, so that's one of these sigmoid kind of things. So sure, I'm cool with that. I would say that's a valid use of the word. Let's look at this one. I've been on television for almost 12 years. This is Conan O'Brien who said this. And in that relatively short time, I've seen the medium change exponentially. He means a lot, right? He just means an awful lot, and he wants to sound smart or something. But can television change exponentially? Here it is, and here it is changed exponentially. I don't know. I mean, the number of people watching television could grow exponentially, though I don't think it does anymore. Certainly the number of people watching TV on the internet, on computers, that actually has grown exponentially. But the medium hasn't changed exponentially. So I would say, this one's okay, this one's not okay. And the way that I test it to see if it's really okay is if I can draw a little equation like this. So now in the tsunami's aftermath, global health experts worry that dangerous microbes already lurking in underdeveloped regions of Asia will spread exponentially, pushing the tsunami's enormous death toll even higher. Yeah. It's kind of depressing. But this is valid, right? So this is saying that the area affected as a function of time is getting bigger, like 10 to the time. All right? Injury rates for cheerleaders are exponentially higher for a flyer than a footballer. So cheerleaders are exponentially more likely to get hurt than football people. No, it's just a lot higher, a whole lot higher. I'll even buy the premise that it's more dangerous to be a cheerleader. That's fine, I'm okay with that. But I'm not okay with using exponential in this way. There's no growth, there's no trend. It's just two points. All right, so with that being said, I'm going to give you a hint of this, but I'm not going to go into the details yet. So what does this growth rate stuff have to do with algorithms at all? And here's what I would like to get us to understand. And that is that as the number of, as the size of the input to an algorithm grows, that's going to be our n, we want to know how does the running time of the algorithm grow? And in the sock sorters that we looked at, so you want to sort n pairs of socks, how many pulls out of the basket do you have to do? And it turns out, for most of the sorters that we talked about, that number grows like n squared. It grows like old McDonald's grows.
okay? Except for the best algorithm, which ended up growing linearly. The best algorithm, if you have 100 pairs of socks, it takes 100 times, or two, maybe twice that, times drawing out of the basket. Here, if you are talking about 10 times as many socks, this is the way that Hillis says it, if you're talking about 10 times as many socks, you're roughly doing 10 squared, 100 times as much work. Or here, if you're talking about 10 times as many socks, you're doing 10 times as much work. And that's the magic of algorithms that do things linearly instead of quadratically. Quadratic algorithms, do you want slightly bigger problems? It's going to take you a lot more time. You want one slightly more verses of Old MacDonald? It's going to take you a lot more time. But one more verse of the dreidel song just takes one more verse of the dreidel song. It's always the same amount. So that's the connection that I'd like to make. So go off and think about songs and stuff. And if you have any cool songs that you want to sing for us, that would be great. Otherwise, we'll back to socks next time.
For the exam problem.
Right. That's what you asked for. Mm-hmm. And one, I'm going to email, and two, I'm waiting for... I could tell you any of them, but if you want them all printed so you can study from them,
yeah.
Then I'll email them.
Do you want me to email you?